Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott drink a Californian Syrah by Coipe. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault.
Welcome, everybody, to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, as always, I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Good evening, folks. It's good to be here. Rob, how are you tonight?
I am exceptional. Obviously, the Triple B is off to bed. Otherwise, I would introduce her. Yeah. And the superstar is off doing whatever the superstar does.
Superstarring. He's just being super.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
In the stars.
Yeah. Well.
On tonight's show, though, Scott and I are doing things that Becky doesn't want to do. She said, I don't want to drink that. Ew.
Icky. Oh, I thought you were talking about that other thing. We're not doing that tonight.
No, not you and I. No.
Okay.
I've told you that many times. No, I don't want to do that with you. But on tonight's show, we're going to be going to...
So stoked.
Yes, the south of San Francisco. And drinking... what we used to would call a Rhone Ranger wine.
Oh.
Wines that specialize in Rhone varietals.
You know, you haven't used that phrase in a long time. The Rhone Ranger.
Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, Roussillon.
Roussillon.
All those kind of good grapes that we love in California. And this is one of the ones that historically has been a great producer of those type of things in a reasonable price range. And that is Coipe. Coipe Winery in California. This is their Central Coast Syrah from the 2018 vintage. It's an interesting wine. Oh, by the way, it's Coipe. That's how they want to pronounce it. K-Y-O-O-P-A-Y or hyphen P-A-Y.
Kewpie burgers.
It's an American, a Native American Kumish word for California poppy.
Oh,
Coipe. So we'll call it Coipe. I've been mispronouncing it Coipe. Well. It's Coipe, even though it should be Coipe. But that's okay. It's Coipe. It's their Syrah, predominantly. Although it is blent with 13% Grenache, 3% Tempranillo, and 2% Mourvèdre.
Ooh.
Very interesting wine in the fact that we get to use the New World Syrah glasses, which I enjoy. Also, we branch back out into Syrah, which we don't drink a whole lot of. We really don't.
We don't. It seems like we had a Syrah a couple months back.
But we have them occasionally. Triple B is not a big fan. She's never really liked Syrah. She just hasn't. I don't know if she could ever put her finger on that, but it's not something that she's ever particularly cared for.
Which is fine.
No. I'm not saying you have to like it. We do because we are, you know, Francophiles, I suppose would be the term.
In those things that she may not care for, things that we kind of love.
Yes, things that don't taste good.
Well, they're classically pungent.
Pungent. That is a very good way of putting it. So... on tonight's show, we are going to be breaking this wine down, and we're going to be doing some more. We're going to go back. We've done this in another episode. I don't know if it ever aired, but we have the game of Wine Wars.
Wine Wars.
We're going to ask each other questions from the box.
We're going to ask yourselves.
That's true. And see if we know any of those. Like Loretta Lynn. Who the fuck knows? I actually...
Loretta Lynn?
Didn't she have that song? I confronted the person that bought this for me as a nice gift. And she goes... and she knew the answer to that damn Loretta Lynn. What the song... What did she still have? Two bottles of wine. Remember? Yeah. She knew that. She's like, oh, yeah, she sang it. I was like, well, you're just a hayseed, aren't you? So, I said, in reality, people that play a wine trivia game... do they know who Loretta Lynn is? Probably not. And if you do know Loretta Lynn, are you going to be playing a wine trivia game? Well, you're not going to get very many points. So that's the one point.
So elitist.
If you're drinking Faygo and playing Wine Wars, I suppose you would. So,
well,
there we go. Well, we're going to take a break.
Diet Faygo.
Red Faygo.
Shasta.
Big Red Pop. Ooh. And be right back here on the Wine Vault. Back, folks. So the Coipe, Central Coast, I believe is what this is. Yes, there's Central Coast Syrah, 2018 vintage. This wine does have some reviews.
What?
Oh, yeah. It has reviews, folks. And so the first, we're going to go from low to high. It's Jeb Dunnick, who has excellent hair.
He has excellent hair.
He's a handsome man, that Jeb Dunnick.
Well,
you know,
he's because he has excellent hair.
He worked for NASA. So, James Suckley never worked for NASA.
Well,
no. He made a paper airplane one time and it crashed. Dickhead.
So, don't pull somebody's eye out with that thing, Jimmy.
I don't know what you mean.
Ma.
My airplane flew gloriously 3 feet. Then I landed in the toilet. I don't know why. So, Jeb gave it 90 of his points. And he wrote, coming from a mix of sites and a blend of 82% Syrah, 13% Grenache, and the rest Tempranillo Mourvèdre, the 18 Syrah Central Coast sports a saturated ruby purple color, as well as peppery, crunchy notes of blackberries, black raspberries, leafy herbs, and peppered meat. This elegant, medium-bodied, spicy red has loads to love and will evolve over a solid 7 to 8 years. $16.99, by the way, folks. Next, it's Wilford Wong.
Yes. It's Wilford Wong. I provided this wine 90 of my points, and unfortunately, they got my diary again. And
mango chutney red snapper.
Damn it. I didn't want everyone to know I had erectile dysfunction, and I was looking at Cialis, but it was in my diary, and they published it with the Coipe. It's embarrassing. Anyway, commentary. The 2018 Coipe Syrah is delicious and nicely textured. Then tasting notes. I capitalize tasting notes and commentary, so you know that this is my tasting notes and commentary. Anyway, I wrote, briefly, really, this wine shows abundant black fruit and a hint of minerality in its aromas and flavors. Pair it with well-seasoned lamb stew. And I tasted it last May, and I was in San Francisco when I did that. That's right. Was I? It was in my diary. Maybe I shouldn't tell people where I am at a certain time. Then I might be linked to certain crimes that happened there. They have a serial flasher in San Francisco, and I don't want to be associated with that gentleman, although I've seen him many times. I'm a big fan of his. That's right. Oh, damn it. This is on the air, isn't it?
Wilford, what? You spend way too much time in front of your mirror. That's who you're recognizing, sir.
Well, you know, it's hard to... Well, it is hard. But in San Francisco, it's breezy, so you can wear a trench coat in May and still fit in. So, thank you.
So, next... Next, we go to someone's basement, and we have the tasting panel. They had a quorum.
Oh, very nice.
Hey, this is Ricky. Ricky, we have 5 people here tonight. We can review it.
That sounds like Wilford.
And I knocked on the door. They wouldn't open. I said, do you have Hot Pockets? I know that they have pizza rolls in there. Those assholes won't share with me. Their mom makes meatloaf. It's delicious, and they won't let me eat it.
You know Ricky won't let you come if you don't bring your Cialis, Wilford.
There's a lot of double entendres in what you just said. I don't want to talk about it. Don't ever say come to me again.
I know how you spell that. Anyway, the tasting panel, all four of them, they wrote, aged in 16 months, 15% new. What the fuck? Burgundy barrels. Go fuck yourself. Francois Frères Burgundy barrels, you dumb cunts. This Syrah dominant blend with 13% Grenache, 3% Tempranillo, and 2% Mourvèdre comprises fruit sourced from vineyards spanning from San Inez, to Paso Robles. With an echo of Northern Rhone, it shows the grit, graphite, and a bite that true Syrah lovers seek out. Aromas of steamy, dark fruit, earth, and animal make it a deep impact. That's right. As do flavors of black pepper and juicy plum. The sensational mouthfeel and finish of dark chocolate-covered cherries leave us convinced, all four of us, that this beloved label remains an icon. See, I told you it was good. And a great value to boot. I told you they're an icon. They're a $16 icon.
By yes. The tasting panel.
The tasting panel. Yes.
They at least wrote a wine review of it, although it's like...
We love the Totino's pizza rolls.
Yeah.
Supreme pizza rolls.
Take all the cliches about Syrah and they just put it all in that one wine review.
The Wikipedia article was strong that time.
Good for them. Tasting panel.
That's right. The specific type of Burgundy barrels.
Yeah.
Douche. Oh, I can taste that. No, you can't.
You know, this is in the glass.
Yes, in the glass.
This is not the darkest, most concentrated looking Syrah we've ever had. In fact, I would suggest it's
dark.
It's dark, but
dark. You can't see your paper, dummy. It has a beautiful red crimson edge to it. It's a very lovely looking Syrah. It's not as extract. It's got.
It's not as extracted as most Syrah.
It's a $16 Syrah.
Okay,
it doesn't look like tar in the glass. You're right.
Correct.
And those Syrahs typically that look like tar taste like tar.
Mm.
Yes, I know. It has the. What did they say? The grit, graphite, and bite that true Syrah.
And think if they'd have let Wilford in.
Just imagine how crazy that night was in the basement.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, I could only imagine.
I thought I saw somebody with a 3-cylinder Mini out front. I went, who is that? Is the unlicensed in there? He has 3 cylinders in his car.
Whoa.
Vroom, vroom.
Oh.
82 horsepower.
Mm.
Yes. So. It looks nice. On the nose, black fruits, blackberry, a little bit brambliness. A streak of minerality right down the slaty, actually.
Beautiful looking in the glass. Those legs.
Oh, yes. There is graphite on the nose.
Yeah. Which you kind of expect that.
Yeah, you do. It smells like a wine that Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver, wants to drink. Yes, it smells like something that you want.
It's lovely. It really is a lovely nose. It's not overzealous, but it's you'd expect this concentration of aroma. From any Syrah that's worth its
folks,
weight.
I anticipate the unlicensed becoming a Coipe fanboy. That's what I anticipate. I bought this with him in mind.
You know, what I'd be interested in trying is definitely the Grenache.
I've never seen that anywhere. The Syrah, this is all you see.
Okay.
And they're white. It's Syrah. You know what I like?
The length.
Well, the length. Medium bodied. Nothing more. The meaty minerality. The animal, as they would say. It's the red meat minerality. Mm-hmm. And then on the finish, the crescendo of the oak and the minerality. Because then the finish, as I'm speaking right now, the finish is still going on. The finish. Oh my good lord, that is a fantastic finish. Excellent finish. This is a ritzy wine.
It's those burgundy barrels.
It's the Francoise Ferris Burgundy. On the panel, which is a folding table.
Well, it's more wood paneling.
We have a couple sawhorses and some boards, and we it's a panel. Paneling? The basement in my parents' house has wood paneling. What? There's four of us.
Wrong pipe.
Okay, so let's start off on this wine. First of all, excellent standard bearer representation of Syrah, especially at $17.
Yep.
It has nods to French Rhone grapes. It doesn't taste all that Cali.
Yeah. The fruit's French in that it's so subdued, even at a young age.
Yeah.
As it hit my palate, I got a sense of tartness that's not there after the second and third touches, but there was a sense of tartness, maybe just a spritz of acidity, but that's gone now.
It is gone now, yeah.
But did you get that same thing?
Just a twinkle, but that is gone. What is there? The fruit is a little bit unusual in the fact that it's, what is that, red currant? It's not blackberry. It's somewhere between a cherry and a red currant, yep. But I'm going to say a little more savory than that. It's savory fruit with just a wink and nod of anise. Because it has a little bit of a backstrap of black licorice, but it's not the sweet part. It's just that little bitter, a little bit of a slightly bitter edge to it, which plays in the minerality. Mm-hmm. And really the minerality, the red meat minerality.
It's red meat minerality.
That crescendos into the spiciness on the finish and the length from that, the judicious, well, obviously the French Burgundy barrels. Really accentuate that finish and make it so upscale. It is a wine for those that are very serious, that do buy a Robert Parker, but like to have the periodicals with the binder clips. It's a binder clip wine. Yeah, you're a bit of a nerd.
Probably.
Yeah.
Study the periodic elements.
Oh, yes, but you know about the winemaking process too.
Appreciate physics calculations.
Amortization schedules. You're an actuary. It's an actuary one.
Yeah.
You know. It's not it does have some pretty elements, but its form and function is representing a Rhone style Syrah from California. And it does it spot on.
You know what I expected this to be, that it's not.
What's that?
A little more beastly, a little more animalistic. It's not. It's a little more it's refrain. It's
always talk about that, though. But Syrah, how many Syrahs? And we've done expensive. We did the Klopp Coronas off the air, but those are very, introspective floral wine. Syrah has so many different hats it wears, but not many of them are beastly. We've had some beastly Syrahs, but those weren't all that good.
Correct. And I expected it to have that kind of the California Syrah kind of little more, maybe beastly is not the right word, but to be more rustic and a little more harsh elements.
Yeah, but those are the bad sides of.
Correct.
I mean, Syrah has...
This is young, and it's
got
a little bit of elegance to it.
Yes.
It really does.
Yeah.
at a young age, which you just don't expect that. It's $17. I mean, this has a I'm gonna call it a silky mouthfeel.
Sure.
You know, it's not this foamy or dairy or creamy. It's just kind of nice and silky.
Mm-hmm. Now, with
the
that.
Length is the superstar of this thing.
The one thing, though, that you have to caution people about is the fruit profile is savory fruit. And that isn't necessarily appealing to your novice drinker. This isn't a novice drinker wine. You know, your buddy that or your friend that drinks, you know, Stella Rosa isn't going to like this wine. I mean, I'm sorry. I have this great wine. You should try. Don't do that to them. Don't do that because it's not going to help. There are many wines out there that are a good bridge. This is not a bridge.
No.
This is on the other side of the bridge, inland a little bit. It takes appreciating and enjoying French wine to appreciate and enjoy this wine, because this wine thinks French. It acts French. It's just not located in France.
Yeah. You know, this is a wine where you'd have to take a footpath to a stone bridge, probably up a big hill.
Yeah.
With a walking cane get there. This is not an easy journey.
No. Also, though, the way the fruit comes across, you can sense a little bit of Cali that is there.
Give you that.
Because the French can embrace the minerality. They can embrace the, you know, the Garrigue, just the earthiness, the terroir, a little bit more than this wine can, because this wine is trying to resemble them. But they can't do that through what's in the soil. They have to do that within the winemaking process, the way the oak is treated, things of that nature. So, you know, part of, I think, the savory nature is the nature of the oak that were used as Burgundy barrels. You can sense a little bit of that Burgundian quality to this wine. The roundness of the fruit, the way it comes across, the way it is slightly lean, all those things remind me a bit of a Burgundy. But yet, you know, it's Syrah. There's just little elements of, you can see the treatment of the wine. You know, that being said, when you're going from different vineyard to vineyard to get your blend, you can get something that really does get to where you want to be. But still, fruit is the land is the land. And, you know, Rhone is different than Cali. I don't care where you are in Cali.
Oh, sure.
And so it still is, the roots are in Cali. The mind is in France. It's an interesting comparison.
I wonder what the age of these vines are.
I don't know. I don't think it says that. First of all, it only mentions that they only have the 16 mentioned on their website, which is a little old. Maybe they haven't updated it in a while. But Quépe has been around for quite some time. I can say that, Scott. When I was selling wine, that's over 20 years ago now, Quépe was a major player. And although Syrah was not like, it was not a grape we sold much of as a straight varietal, at least not from California. Quépe, though, is one that we always carried, you know?
Right.
And we always sold because it was an OG. It was one of the first, really, that came out and did this. It was before, really, Tinsley or any of those other ones that are out there. And I buy Tinsley. But It was before all of those. And, you know, and we've had other things. This is the thing, folks. South of San Francisco, you're going down in Santa Barbara and whatnot. There's a lot of good Syrah producers. I mean, Cambria, their bench break Syrah is very, very good. We've had that before. It's in the Hall of Fame. And beyond that, there's many good Syrah producers. But back to what I was saying, since I interrupted myself, for Christ's sake. This was always,
reach back and kiss myself.
And this was always one of those wines that we'd point to. Oh, I want to try something different today. Try Quépe.
Yeah.
Always. And we always had it on, I think, the glass shelf. It cost around the same price, but it was unique. It was a hand sell wine. And so,
what do you mean by that? What's that? What do you mean by hand sell?
People didn't come in looking for
Quépe. You had to put your hand out and say, hey, look at this.
Yeah. Well, our store was a little bit different. I mean, it's retail, but we had wine stewards within there. Now, this was early 20s, Rob. I thought I knew a lot about wine. I didn't know shit about wine.
Mm.
because, I mean, how much experience did I have? I know so much more about wine today. It's almost shocking. It's, yeah. But that being said, I knew enough, and I knew what was good on the shelves, and I could help people. And with that, and I still bought wine, but whatever, we had certain wines that we knew that we liked and we knew that people should try, but they're not going to just walk up and take them. You know, we were blessed with the fact that we were known as a place people came in and said, what should I buy? That was a very common occurrence. Or we'd walk up and say, hey, can I help you? You know, this is, you know, what you're looking for tonight. And we would steer them. And often, Quepe might be one of those that you'd steer them to. Now, they'd have to be a little bit unique because whenever you're selling wine, at least in those days in a retail setting, you have to gauge the customer. You know, if they're looking at White Zin, you're not going to say, well, yeah, try Quepe. That's really stupid. Don't do that. You're going to take them to Washington Hills Riesling or Columbia Cellar Master's Reserve or something like that. But, you know, if they're wine drinkers and they know what they're doing and they want something out of the ordinary, and that wasn't an unusual question for us, you could take them to a Quepe or something like that.
And still, you know, not offend their pocketbook.
No. I mean, other things that are on that glass shelf that you'd hand sell, Ridge. We always had a selection of Ridge Zinfandels. Mm. We had this big glass shelf, and that was single vineyard specialty Zinfandels.
Nice.
Because we were a Zinfandel shop. We liked that Dash, Ridge, bunch of single vineyard, Green and Red, Edzone Panino, Robert Bolly, stuff like that was on that shelf. Turley didn't exist. You couldn't buy Turley. It existed, but you couldn't find it. It was not available retail setting wise. But all that kind of stuff we could get and we buy. Terra de Oro, Gallo made some great single vineyard stuff.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But this was in there on that same shelf. The big things that you'd sell would be Dash, Green and Red, stuff like that. That's a wine that I haven't had in so many years is Green and Red Zinfandels. We need to try one. You need to get that. You need to buy one of those. Get Green and Red Zin. Although I think it's out of stock on wine.com right now. They don't have much. Must be inventory time. Green and Red, though, is worth trying. Franus is another one, or Franus. I think it's Franus. Franus is excellent. But they do a lot of Mead Ranch stuff. Atlas Peak, whatnot.
Chilean.
What?
Oh, Child's Valley, excuse me.
Child's Valley.
I saw Child's Valley and I read Chile.
Very small sections of Napa.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But Quepe was one of those hand sells, and it was always very, very fun to sell.
Well,
Fess Parker, there's another one.
Yeah. And did we do a Fess Parker year one?
No, we've never done Fess Parker.
Okay.
Another one, Frog's Leap. Huh. We all know it as a premium producer. Back in those days, it was one of these kind of hand sell things. It was a Quepe.
Huh.
So Quepe is in my mind. I know it, and it's a special producer. I mean, or Quepe, I'm sorry. I've pronounced it Quepe for 25 years, but what Quepe. Do you think, Scott? What do you think?
I see why you were able to hand sell this, and people, if they tried this, I'm guessing they came back for more?
Yeah. There'd be people to buy a case of Quepe. I mean,
I don't know why I expected it to be. I guess harsher's the word I expected. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect it to be this nice at a young age. I expected there, you know, to say, okay, it's going to be all right, and it's going to be better if it sits for a couple years.
It could sit for a couple years.
It could, but you know what? Mm-hmm. You can drink this right now.
I think this would look very good in the Scott File cellar.
Just as a little pull it out in a couple years thing.
Yeah. I think you would do quite well with a couple of these.
That's interesting.
No, I mean,
I'd like to find the Grenache. I'll be honest with you.
I don't. I've never seen it. But I specifically bought this because I know, Becky didn't care about it, but I knew. We hear Becky upstairs. I mean, she has a broken leg and she's hopping about. But I knew this is something that you should try.
Good call.
Well, I mean, I just knew. I said, I've passed on it many times. I said, you know what? Scott should try that because it's up his alley.
You know, when you don't quaff it and you just enjoy a dash, a little small mouthful, and you don't quaff air of it.
Yeah.
You know what's demonstrating a little bit?
What's that?
A little pencil lead.
Well, yeah, sure. The graphite,
yeah. Just a little, it doesn't have that tobacco. There's no leather there. It is what it is, but it's really nice. The star of the show for me is the combination of the mouthfeel and that finish.
Oh, yeah.
What more could you want out of an entry price bottle of wine?
At $16-$17, come on.
And yeah. True to the varietal. Budget entry price, quality maker knows what they're doing. Artisanally oaked. I mean, this is as quality an oaking that you can get.
Well, I mean, look at the barrels they used. I mean, for Christ's sake. Wow.
Jesus.
What type of burgundy barrel did they use? Did they say? Oh, my God. Look online. No, don't look at the I didn't know you could do that. I've never seen that. Is that woman naked? I've never seen a naked woman before. I mean, I saw my mom naked, but that's different, I think.
Ricky, do you have my Cialis?
Oh, why? Well, Wilfred's here. Don't let him in. Come on, guys.
Poor Wilfred.
I know. He's always disrespected. Good thing he has us to respect him.
Yes. And it's Mango Chutney. Mango
Chutney on Red Snapper. Mango Chutney on brownies. Mango Chutney on mangoes.
Mango Chutney is delicious, though.
You know, he just probably yells. He probably has Tourette's. And he just yells out Mango Chutney. It's like when he's... Nah, I can't say that. But anyway.
It's Tourette's light, though.
Oh, Mango Chutney.
He only yells out bad food combinations.
It's like, dear, we're in the throes of passion and you yell out Mango Chutney?
Have you ever had it? It goes good on everything. It's strange. I said, Wilford, let's do something different tonight. I have some whipped cream and you can spread it on more. How about some mango chutney? No. What? And mango chutney and tuna fish.
And then that's why he's not had a woman in quite some time, but no.
Why do I always screw up the first date?
It's because you're 82.
I want to feed you mango chutney. It comes in a ladle. Tilt your head back.
You did what in a ladle?
What?
No. You're 82. you know.
Poor Willie.
I know. No, I didn't tell him to have alliteration in his name. I would not make fun of him if he didn't have alliteration.
Yeah, of course you would.
I wouldn't. James Suckling. I make fun of him because he's James Suckling.
Masterclass.
He's the biggest douchebag I've ever seen in my life.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, you're running second, but still.
Well, that's why Becky took the mirrors down.
But look at this. We don't make fun of everybody. I don't make fun of Jeb Dunnick.
Well, he has too nice a hair.
He is very handsome. Also, he seems to know what he's doing. He gives good reviews.
There's that.
James. I had this wine, and it was a $3 Chilean. It came out, and the wine is actually, they put a sock puppet on top of the wine. And you drink like you're making out with a sock puppet. You tilt the wine back, and you give the sock puppet the tongue. And I gave it 99 of my points because I got to throat a sock puppet.
Drink or hold.
You know, the Chilean wine. They're like, hey, this Suckling guy's coming in. Let's put a sock puppet on the wine and tell him he has to drink through the mouth of the sock puppet. Oh, this is a local custom? Okay. That doesn't look like the mouth of a sock puppet. That sock puppet is anatomically correct.
What's an anatomically correct sock puppet?
I have to do what with the sock puppet? Oh, it's local? It's a local thing. Okay, I guess I'll do it. What do you mean? Am I on Instagram? I don't understand. Filleting a sock puppet. Yes.
Well.
What? Is that what happened? Damn those Chilean bastards.
And now we know why he's not allowed back in Chile.
Well.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. So, folks, we're going to take a break. And then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So on tonight's potpourri, we're going to go through some questions from the trivia game Wine Wars. Now, traditionally, you know, you'd use this as a game. However, this is such a obtuse game. We are going to just go through the questions and just kind of have a discussion as to how wrong they are, probably. But Scott, start off.
Very long.
Start to scart us off as a discussion.
Scart us off?
Scart us off.
Scart? Scart?
It's a new.
Is that like a shart?
It's a new term.
Scart?
I'm an innovator. Go ahead.
That's a clothing item that I would wear.
A skirt? Yes, you
Scart.
Would. A skirt.
Vinifera.
Vinifera, yes.
True or false?
Ooh.
The world's major wine-producing regions lie between the latitudes 30 degrees and 50 degrees north and south of the equator.
True.
It is true, and the what you're getting at is there's a line. If you draw across, just think North America and Europe.
The equator is zero.
Correct. But there's a line that you would draw across the world, and guess what it would cut through?
And it would.
California, Washington, Oregon, France, Spain, and Portugal.
Well, if you drew a line longitudinally through Ohio, it would go right to Germany. You say, oh. Problem with Ohio is it has the vine rot
and
the parasitic.
We have some other issues.
Parasitic soils and whatnot.
We have some other issues,
and we don't have undulations or anything.
Mountains.
We don't have people with all their teeth. Things like that also affect it. Yeah. Here you go, Scott. Which French champagne is drier? A bottle labeled Brut or a Bond labeled Extra Dry?
Brut.
That would be correct. You'll often see that extra dry means it's sweeter, which is stupid, but it's true. If you see something that's natural, you're not going to see that in France, but you're going to see Corbel has a natural. That's the driest. But Demi-Sec, sweet. So think about that. You're not going to see also, let's just talk about.
There's an easy mistake to think that what sounds the driest isn't necessarily the driest.
Yes.
More, and I made that mistake. We were going to buy some stuff to do cheap champagne on the
and
show.
And you bought extra.
And
dry.
I bought the wrong one.
That's why I asked the question. Moët Chandon, they make Dom Pérignon. They don't have necessarily Brut, extra dry, blah, blah, blah. What they have is Brut Imperial is Brut. Then they have White Star, and you'll see that frequently. That's their extra dry. It sells quite well. And then they'll have a Blue.
That's that funk song from the 90s, isn't it? White Star.
Anyway.
You must be.
And then they have a Demi-Sec, which is a blue label, and that is sweeter. That's how you'll know that exists. And if you buy Veuve Clicquot, you're a moron. So
easy.
You should have bought Bollinger.
A lot of people like that.
And they're stupid.
Well, it's very popular. It's good.
Bollinger and Tattinger. Both.
Yeah, well.
Bollinger's really fucking good.
Would you rather drink
Veuve
Clicquot? Say it again.
Bluefield Co.
Yeah. Or Rotor's Estate.
Rotor's Estate.
There you go. Particularly for the price. Don't you think particularly for the price point?
Forgetting price.
Easy.
Would I rather drink
easy
Bluefield Co. or Schramsberg?
Schramsberg.
Would I rather drink Bluefield Co. or Iron Horse? Iron Horse.
I don't know Iron Horse.
It's good. Would I drink...
But Bluefield Co.'s good.
It's good, but it's not worth the price.
Nope.
The Bluefield Co. vintage is, but it's hard to find. Unless you buy it like me. There's so many good things, though. There's so many good champagnes out there that are just fantastic. Real champagnes.
Food and wine pairings.
Yes.
Which element of a restaurant-ordered bottle of wine should be noted first? That it's clean, that it has an intact label, that it has an intact cork, or that the wine that presented is what you've ordered.
Is that a real question?
Yes.
Probably that what you ordered is what you ordered.
Yeah. And we've had that issue when we've been out, haven't we?
Yeah, we've had that issue. The barn, specifically, when they brought me, I ordered, in no judgment, Chateau Saint-Jean's Sonoma County Cabernet, and they brought me out the fucking California.
They tried to bring out the California.
And I said, that's not it. Oh, yeah. No. Fuck sticks. That's not the fucking right wine.
No, it's not.
Take that shit back. Sell that to Scott on the clearance shelf.
Like, we also had that the night of infamy at the Avenue.
We did, but it was more along the lines of they couldn't find. We were buying, we had Segesio, Zinfandel. Then I had ordered a bottle of, we thought Steve was coming, a bottle of Jergal's Hermitage. No, yes. Yes, the Gross Hermitage.
The first thing you wanted, they actually didn't have, couldn't find it, I think.
I don't know.
I think we had
the
to
Gross
go back.
The Gross Hermitage, they had a hard time finding it, but the Gross Hermitage by Jergal was fantastic. And do we have a third bottle?
No, we just had two.
Well,
we
yes.
weren't that
so we had
luscious.
Segesio's,
I think we had a cocktail
also. Yeah, well, yeah. Segesio's Zinfandel, the Sonoma Zin, and then Jergal's Gross Hermitage. And yep. They had a hard time finding that last one. I helped them.
It was a nice meal. Even if we got stiffed and we were pissed all night.
That's true.
That Carpaccio with the quail egg.
That was not, but I had.
Well,
that.
It was different. It wasn't Carpaccio. It was
tartare.
It was tartare. Done in cubes, right?
That is tartare. Yes. Beef tartare is in cubes. I don't know, about maybe a year and a half ago, went to the Avenue with Adam, my buddy Adam, and just sat at the bar. Adam got the shrimp cocktail, and I got the beef tartare with the quail egg.
I've gone in.
All by myself.
I've gotten in by myself and just had it with nobody else.
It's great. Glass pours of, I want to punch myself in the face to say this, but
Miami?
The Francis Ford Coppola, his director's cut Alexander Valley Cabernet.
Okay.
Which is good.
You have too many issues with Coppola.
I know. We've had obviously the directors and the director's cut. We've had the Alexander Valley Cabernet on the show. I don't think that's ever aired. I'll have to get that on the B-sides. I have to actually listen to it, see what it sounds like, then put it on the B-sides.
You were so angry.
That was good?
A lot of our listeners like it when the triple B gets angry. You were venomous.
But it wasn't Hall of Fame good. It was good. It was good. It wasn't Ferrari Carano good, but it was good. But it was good.
But you were venomous that
but
night.
It's Ferrari Carano, but it's still Alexander Valley, and it's good. All right, next one. Hey, Scott, here's a good one.
Okay.
No.
I know I'm a good one, but just give me a good question.
True or false, Scott?
Yes.
The fewer grapes a grapevine grows, the more likely flavors will be concentrated to make quality wine.
That's correct.
It is.
And
you're so smart.
The reason for that, just in a general sense, the plant can put more of its resources to each individual grape.
Well, that's just general.
It's just the fact of a plant is a resource. It has so much water. It has so many nutrients. It's going to grow this
much.
The
grape is the leftover. So it's like the byproduct of the processes of the vine. Or, I mean, anything. The apple is the leftover. It's the end of the line from the apple tree or the orange or whatever. It's the end of the line. So it's basically the waste.
Oh, my Lord.
It's so tasty, though. Go ahead, Scott.
Food and wine pairings.
Yes.
What is the purpose of wine glasses that are twice the size of a serving?
Mm-hmm.
To prevent spills while swirling?
No.
To create ambiance? Or to provide a greater capacity for heavy drinkers?
Say those options again.
What is the purpose of wine glasses that are twice the size of a serving? To prevent spills while swirling? To create ambiance? Or to provide a greater capacity for heavy drinkers?
Well, I would say it's to concentrate the flavors and the aromas, but I suppose it would be number two.
No, you had it. You got it wrong by saying number two. To prevent spills while swirling and capture aromas.
Well, you didn't say that part.
Well, that was part of the answer.
Oh, you dick.
I read the question. Hmm. But we talk about glassware all the time on the show. I don't think we have in this episode, but
no.
You know, certain glasses are designed for certain blends and varietals and style of wine, and it's hugely important to the presentation, the what you expect to get from the wine, whether it's aromas or where a wine would hit your palate as you consume it.
And folks, we exclusively drink from Riedel glassware.
We like some Schweiz.
They've been kicked. I don't use those anymore. But
Spielgau.
Schweizel. But which is owned by Riedel. But
yeah.
Anymore, I've replaced the Schweizel. They're down. They're the auxiliary glasses. They'll never be used again. But we exclusively use Riedel. At least I do. I know I have. How many Riedel glasses do I have, Scott?
I have no clue.
It's ridiculous. It's obscene.
You are obscene.
I keep adding more.
You do.
I have 40, 50 different glasses? I pretty much have every varietal covered. Tonight we're drinking it out of the Coipe.
The New World?
Syrah? The New World Syrah glasses.
Hey, I recognized it.
We also have Old World Syrah glasses, right.
And
of course.
You probably just have some Syrah glasses.
No, I don't have the standard Syrah. These are the Venom Extremes, which I prefer. I don't think, there's not a lot of variance in the standard Venoms, and they're harder to find. Yeah, I like the Extreme. We have Extreme Pinot and Extreme Zin as well. We like the Extreme Pinot quite a bit. I'm a big believer in varietal-specific glassware. Naturally, not everybody's a nutball like I am. And you know what?
That's an understatement of the year.
I know.
Well, there's Dabo Sweeney.
Well, he's a douchebag. But
nutball, too.
If you were...
Some people might say you're a douchebag, too. I'm just saying.
First of all, Pinot glasses, must. For Nebbiolo and Pinot. You can't put Pinot in something other than that. Other than that, though, I recently bought Scott the Overture series by Riedel, their Magnum series. That's a good all-around glass.
It's a really good all-around glass. And
really,
you know,
really good one.
It's kind of a... Stubby's not the right word, but it's a short stem.
Short stem, yeah.
But it's still, it's a crystal glass, and what was so surprising about it, just looking through the bowl empty, it reflects the light so beautifully. It's mm-hmm. gorgeous. It almost has a prism effect. It's a gorgeous glass. But when you look at it, you're like, it's just a basic glass. Mm-hmm. But it's a gorgeous, well-purposed glass. We drank Zin out of that. We had, that cab, the Ars de Pirque.
Yeah, the Hosinet. Hosinet, yep.
What did she... Oh, a little Grenache that she got from Grain and Grape. Nice little Grenache.
And those glasses work well for all of
those. It worked well for all those. I don't know that I drink Grenache out of it all the time, but it worked.
Mm-hmm. I would drink Old World Syrah. I would use Old World Syrah.
For the Grenache.
Actually, sometimes with the New World Syrah glasses, a young Chilean kind of a shitty cab, utilizing these glasses work a little bit well because they're a little bit more tapered and they kick it up a little bit. Although I recently got the Grand. Well, you have these the Vinum Grand Cabernets.
Yeah.
So the Grand Vin Bordeaux glasses, massive Bordeaux. Ass.
They're big.
Yeah, and I did.
Huge, huge.
I drank
huge
Montes Cabernet out of it.
That's extravagant.
Yes, it was.
That's obscene.
And you know what? It made Montes Cabernet taste better.
Well, at least if you wanted it to be.
I didn't care.
It's great.
Yeah.
The thing about glasses that, you know, before you go and spend good money on a glass, know what you like to drink.
Yes, and zero in on that.
Zero in on that.
I just saw the Schmidt Stoll at Target. They were not Target. TJ Maxx.
Yeah.
And it was the same stuff we had bought, but it was the Cab Merlot kind of level, the Bordeaux style. $12 for four.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
Well, I mean, for a standard red wine drinker, and Schmidt Stoll, is that what
it's Schmidt-Weissel.
Schmidt-Weissel.
Zweigel? We're botching it, folks. We're terrible.
Schatzweigel.
Schatzweigel.
Yes.
There's a G in there, right?
Yeah, no, there's no G. I pulled out one of the what we had done is
yeah, we were pretty close. That was like us talking about the Yiddish.
We had Schatzweigel
kosher. We're
Burgundy glasses. And these were the Wine Vault Burgundy glasses. And they've been retired because I replaced them with Riedel's. But they're still actually good glasses. And for a very inexpensive glass, if for $24, if you could find them, probably at a discount store, for $24, you can get Bordeaux, four Bordeaux, and four Pinots.
And they're made by, it's Riedel, it's a Riedel-owned company. Yeah. Now, Riedel bought them 4 or 5 years ago, but yeah. It's Schott, Schott, Zweisel, Zweisel.
You buy a set of the Bordeaux, a set of the Pinot. You can use the Bordeaux to drink whites out of. That's all you need. You can get by with that.
Well,
you still need.
I'd encourage you for the whites to go like the Chianti, Zinfandel.
Scott, I have two different glasses to drink Chardonnays out of. I mean, obviously.
Chardonnay.
I mean, I have the Montrachet and I have the standard Chardonnay. I mean, I don't even drink Chardonnay, but I have different versions to drink Chardonnay.
I remember when you didn't used to drink rosé.
Still don't.
What'd you have for New Year's Eve?
Brut Rosé. It's different. Sparkler.
Yeah.
Although I like buying Chardonnays just to drink out of the Montrachet glasses.
You don't even like Chardonnay.
No, but I like drinking out of those Montrachet glasses, and so do you.
But I enjoy a good Chardonnay.
So do I. And I have some good Chardonnays for us in the future.
But the point is, know what you like to drink. Get some good glasses proper for that varietal. And if you've got any questions about that, send us an email.
That's true.
Check in with us.
The last question I'm going to ask.
Uh-oh.
Scott.
Is this a humdinger? Is this a humdinger, Rob?
No. Which Napa winery won a famous blind tasting of white wine in the Judgment of Paris on May 24th, 1976? And I actually knew the answer to this.
It's Gallo.
No.
No, wait.
Is it Chateau Montelena, Spring Mountain, or David Bruce?
What? What year was this?
1976.
Huh.
Which should give it away.
Say the answers again.
Chateau Montelena, Spring Mountain, or David Bruce?
I think it's David Bruce.
You'd be extremely incorrect. It's actually Chateau Montelena. They're one of the they're the OG.
But was it Gallo that won a competition as well?
Chateau Montelena is the winery that originally won an award that made California winery respected in some fashion. And I've had Chateau Montelena on a couple of occasions, and I've thought about buying it on a couple of occasions. I just never have pulled the trigger. For some reason, I keep buying Heights as opposed to Chateau Montelena. But they are very old school, similar to Heights, okay? Similar mindset. Wonderful wines. Same price range as Heights, too.
Well,
We never talk about them. They have a Zin that I've sometimes looked at too. Never bought it. I need to. I will. I shall. But I like koi pei. So, you know, what are you going to do? I can buy 3 koi peis for 1 Chateau Montelena. It's hard to do the math there. Yes?
What's the last category there? With the corkscrew and the cork?
It's like, I don't know.
I think it's like the potpourri category
it's
wine wars.
It's called cork culture.
Cork culture.
Yes.
What classic 1942 film contained the famous champagne toast? He is looking at you, kid.
Isn't that Casablanca? Yeah,
that's Casablanca, son.
Yeah.
That was a terrible Humphrey Bogart.
It was. I never watched Casablanca, but...
I've seen parts of it.
I've probably
seen the whole movie watching the parts of it.
I've tried to watch some of those old movies. It's just... For some reason, they just seem foreign to me. I don't know.
Well, Casablanca was largely a foreign film.
No, that's not what I meant. I tried to watch To Catch a Thief.
Which version?
I don't know. The most recent one. I don't know who's in it. What's her name? Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, Gregory Peck, I think, right? No.
No.
David Niven.
No. Cary Grant. It's Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn, I believe. And it was such an odd presentation because you would have a movie, some brief discussion, and then basically...
I was thinking of The King's Thief with David Niven. Sorry.
Then vignettes of musical numbers, and you're like, what is this? It was like a stitch... It was like a sketch... Like a quilt of a movie that was just partially stitched together, and you're like, what the hell? They just didn't have the ability and the technology to do a cohesive thing there, and just provided something that was odd. It was just like watching something out of a foreign language film. You didn't quite understand what was going on.
It just lacked the cachet and culture of, say, Iron Man. You know, I mean, just love Iron Man, don't you? The Maltese Falcon's another one. It's just...
The Maltese Falcon. Oh, okay.
Bogart. Yeah. It's just such an oddball. The characters in it are so extreme, and the... It's almost comical, the freaking scenes where somebody gets violently killed. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're not good movies by modern standards. Well, so.
But a classic. It'd be a classic.
Like us do play acting, you know, because we know.
Or doing a podcast.
Oh,
yes.
Ah! What do you mean? I acted quite well with that sock puppet.
Did you say suck puppet?
That's what they called it on YouTube. I thought it was a local culture. That's what they told me. They said it's a local custom to drink the wine through the sock puppet. And I went, okay. When in Rome, and they said, you're in Chile. I went, it's an expression, asshole. And then they punched me. It was an awkward experience for me. I was beat up by a Chilean and an Argentinian. And a woman from New Zealand, but it's different, you know.
And they all wanted you to play with their sock puppet.
It all ended up that way, pretty much. I don't know why. Apparently word got around.
You get around.
That is true. So I'm an international wine expert. What do you mean?
I wonder why Tim Atkins scorns you.
How do you think I get ahead? You have to sleep your way to the top.
How do you give
wine? Even though I'm self-employed. This is strange. What does that mean? Oh, I know what that means. So, we're going to take a break and then be right back here on the Wine Vault.
And we're back, folks. So the Cuape Central Coast Syrah. We're going to get some reviews on this one tonight. We know what the tasting panel with Wilford said.
What? Huh? I yeah. What, you've been reading my diary again?
And we also know what Jeb Dunnick, who's glorious, viewed this wine at. But what does the unlicensed think? What does his mind think?
You know, I want to score this higher, but I'm just not going to. It's Syrah. You know it's Syrah. It's really good. But it's not a 90. I'm 88 in my points, and I think that's a fair score. I would frame this 87 to 89. It's a really, for what it is, I'm going to say it's an easy drink, and we've talked at length of how it's not straightforward for everybody. It's not the grape for everybody. It's got more, bitter's not the right word, but more pungent flavors.
Yeah, because Syrah typically has that pungent aspect. Someone would call it bitter, but they would be stupid.
Well, but
I, in my commentary, in my diary, I said that's bitter, and people, listen, that's pungent. I went, oh, you're right.
Tastes like a sock puppet.
No, I heard about that. They said we have a custom. I said that's just fucking stupid. Who would fall for that? I'm not gonna fly the sock puppet. And they said James Suckley did it. And I went, that figures. Why did he want me to wear a sock? Now I realize.
I forgot to bring my Seattle.
He had a fetish. Damn Chileans.
Very, very good. The length of this and the mouthfeel are what make this wine.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really good. It's just not spectacular. What would take this up a notch? You know, some combination of more minerality, some tobacco going on, some leather. It does, you know, that little glimpse of Flint we got, it's not there anymore.
But Scott,
the
it's $17.
I know. I know. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine you buying the shit out of this.
Fucking it's $18. $17.
I'm going to give it 89 of my points.
And that's a fair score.
But
if I
agree.
If I would frame it, I would say 87 to 89.
No. It is an 87 to 89. Yeah. It's not quite a 90 because it's not quite memorable enough. But it is the quintessential Syrah.
I love it.
I mean, it's right up your alley.
Yeah. I'm glad you shared this.
But that's why I bought it. I thought you should drink it. It's what Syrah really is. It is the benchmark. And yeah, we've had some Syrahs I think that we'd score higher, but this has all the elements of a Syrah. So if you say to someone, wait, what does California Syrah taste like?
Cuape.
You should drink that.
Cuape.
And that's going to tell you exactly. It's not Klein, for Christ's sake.
No.
There are so many wineries out there that have Syrahs. Cuape is what you're going to show first and say, you know what? Start with this.
Yeah.
This is what it should taste like.
And this is just Central Coast, too.
Yeah.
This is not their more little specific vineyard varietal thing.
A very strong, strong representative that goes in the Value Price Hall of Fame.
Sure. Particularly because of what you said. This is the classic budget and entry price representative of Syrah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, Cambria, what was that? It was vineyard specific, wasn't it? The Cambria?
I think that was their bench break. So it's on the valley floor. It's the right there at the.
It's Central Coast as well.
No, that was. Did we put that up there? It's somewhere up there. I mean, I know it got a 90. We gave it a 90. I don't know what we did with that. I don't think it was Central. It wasn't Central Coast. It was Santa Barbara area.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't think they veer into Central Coast. I don't recall. I know it was Bench Break, but that's like their series, because the Pinot we also had from them we liked. So, and you know, but this is different than that. You know what I mean? I bought a lot of that Cambria, by the way. But I enjoy this differently. the fact that it's a little more traditional Syrah and it represents the the varietal, I think better. It's just the better representation brings up, I wouldn't call it the warts, but the elements of Syrah that are a little harder to get around. Because Syrah is an acquired taste. It's something that you shouldn't just say, oh, this is easy. It isn't easy. It's not an easy grape. It shouldn't be. And and that's fine, Scott, because there should be things that are a little more challenging that exist.
And just
not all should be Meiomi.
And it's not necessarily that it's easy or hard. It's just these things when you're drawing them out of a wine and you're trying to appreciate what they are.
Yeah.
It's not somebody that when you first go to drinking red wine, you're not going to go to Syrah.
No, you're not. No.
You just aren't. And if Syrah is the first thing you pick up, you know, you might have fallen and hit your head on concrete as a child.
You might have kicked yourself in the nuts.
Yeah, or, you know, fallen off your bike too many times through the handlebars.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, I could, you know, start off by eating a cheeseburger, but I think I'm going to start off by eating this escargot. I hear it's very, well, Fargois is actually quite palatable, but
pour confit.
They say it looks natural, and I think I'm going to eat this snail. No, you're not going to do that because you're not going to like it. You're going to starve, and you're like, why am I eating this slimy shit?
Well,
I mean, you know, what the fuck? This isn't food. I put out foil pie pans, and I put cheap beer in it, and I killed these things.
Princess will get escargot.
I know Princess
occasionally.
Princess likes escargot
at the top. Well, yeah. But it's, you know what it is? It's butter and garlic on the snail. So it's like
a lot of butter and garlic. I'd say. Oh, it tastes like that. Tastes really good. It tastes like butter and garlic. It's a parsley.
But you know,
it's got parsley on it.
But, you know, people like oysters too. You know, and
yeah. Well, no, I like raw oysters.
The truth is, good
oysters Rockefeller does not count.
No, good escargot is spectacular. She'll get it different places, and it really does.
I'm not.
But it's a really it's similar in a way. It's similar to Syrah because it's got a lot of minerality to it. It's pungent.
It's one thing I have not indulged in.
Oh, so you've not done it per se?
Escargot?
Right.
No, I've done everything else. Hell, man, I did frog legs. Frogs that I gigged and killed and butchered myself.
That's different now. That's some real
hardcore.
Tastes like chicken.
Well, frogs don't die easy. They're very tough. And what I said when we were doing this, you're not allowed to go out and shoot them with a pellet gun. But that would be a lot simpler because I had to kill this damn frog with a pocket knife. And that little...
What?
Yeah. Gig didn't kill it. So I had to stab it to the pocket knife, and I went, I was like, how is this more humane than popping it in the head with a pellet gun? That doesn't make any sense to me.
So I had a buddy who hunted for him right here in this area. He lived in Canal, and he would all around the little creeks and rivers around here. But he bought a miner's helmet light just for stream gigging frogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the key was that light. He'd shine them right in their eyes and they'd freeze like deer in the road.
It's a grisly business.
That's illegal.
I've deer hunted and gotten many deer.
He had a specific gig gun that he would use. It rigged like an arrow.
I will field dress deer.
He didn't have a problem killing them.
I will field dress deer all the livelong day. And I have. I will not. And that's ghastly. Have you ever done that?
No.
Okay. The first year, we got a deer. I'm sorry. I got a deer. Like a fucking sniper. Like 100 yards through the woods, over a creek, through trees. 12 gauge slug right to the heart. I mean, Scott.
It's a pretty good shot.
It was perfect. Dropped it. Buck. Down. Gone. We weren't really knowledgeable on the field dressing part. It was myself, my Shakespearean Phil, and my father. So we threw the deer in the truck, took it over to my grandfather's. And he was in his 80s at that point. Now he's in his 90s. And So he was going to field dress it. Now, he had hunted for 30, 40, 50 years, only got one deer. First day out, we bring a buck over. It's a nice buck. And he's like, fucking son of a bitch. And so he's showing us how to field dress. I'm actually paying attention. And then he's going to, oh, yeah, you hose it down with this the water hose, clean it out. I knew, you know what, you're going to spray that in a carcass. I'm going to back up. My father and Shakespearean Phil didn't quite get that memo. And they got sprayed with blood, doused with deer blood, because you spray the hose in there. So take that to the processing guy. We go have lunch. We had it at Arthur Treacher's. It was lovely. doesn't matter, man. Anyway.
Why are we talking about Arthur Treacher's? First of all, we're talking about you butchering, your grandfather butchering a deer.
No, no, no. Just and then it field dress. Field dress.
Just field dressing.
And so, yeah, the butchers do that. We're not savages. So we go back.
Field butchering, it means you.
No, no. Field dressing.
Oh, just field dressing.
Okay. Well, yes, you take all the entrails out.
Yeah.
You cut the butthole out. You take the heart out. Yeah. You slit the throat.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Well, they're already dead, but okay.
Well, it's still,
it's a little grisly. And so the second.
So it wasn't. So Pop and Shakespearean weren't just sprayed with blood. They were sprayed with.
Probably feces and urine.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things. But you remove that because you
don't want to taint the meat.
Exactly. And so we come back from lunch, and we're standing around the truck chatting before we go to our spots. And we're standing there with our guns, and we hear rustling in the bushes. And out from the bushes comes another buck charging us. Really bad decision on that buck's part. I was the first to raise my gun and blasted the fucking shit out of that thing. I'm quite good with the firearm, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Well, you're feared.
And I was good. And then Phil follows suit, blasts it, and then my father. Basically, it was like it was a World War One charge into a fucking machine gun's nest, and that buck got leveled. I don't know if it was just spooked, but it's like, you ran the wrong place, fucker. And so it got knocked over a ridge down into a gully. We pull it out, and it was a bigger buck than the one I had got, but it was a big buck. And then this one, though, we've already been trained, right? We're going to field dress it. Well, Phil, because he's a pansy, was throwing up. He was just barfing off to the side because he's a bitch. And so that left myself and my father. That's fine. My father cut out the rectum one. That's great. But there was a problem. We couldn't get the heart out. You know, I was wearing rubber gloves, but they were up to just the wrist. And I might have had a freak out moment. And so I took my hand and I shoved it up the deer's chest cavity. And I ripped out the heart with my hands and ripped it out completely, pulled it out of the chest cavity and held it up like a trophy. I lost my mind. Okay. And my dad and Phil, Phil's still throwing up, mind you. But dad's like, oh, shit. And he never cusses, but he's like, holy fucking shit. I can't believe you just did that. And Phil's just keeled over barfing like a damn pansy. Truth be told, a heart will rip out if you grab it and rip it out. But it's a ghastly business. So, you know. Did I review? I gave it an 89, didn't I?
I don't know.
You're completely dumbfounded.
No, I've heard the story before.
Yeah, and none of it's an embellishment. It really happened. Well, oh, my God. I might have nicked. I don't know. Jesus. It's just when you get frustrated and you're just like, fuck it. And you just do shit.
Well, on your first deer, you're supposed to take a chomp out of the heart, aren't you?
Not a fucking sad. No, I'm not going to eat part of the heart.
So you reach into it. I'm not a savage.
I'm not a native.
I'll reach into the deer's cavity and pull the heart out.
But I'm not going to put that in my mouth. What That's is this, disgusting. Indiana Jones? Yes, it was. Well, how else was that shit going to get out?
And then you,
I suppose the
processor could have taken that.
But it's a very Eastern Ohio, Western Pennsylvania. Your first year, you're supposed to take a chomp out of the heart.
No, you're not.
Yes, you are.
I don't. That's disgusting. Then, I don't know where that deer's been. But the entrails, man, and the stomach, whatnot, you just slice the stomach and just tilt the deer and it falls. We have a backhoe, so, you know, we just tilt the back. Oh, it just falls right out. That's nice. But, yeah, the rest of it was a little bit ghastly, except for Phil, who's keeled over puking. It smells like corn, man. What do you think?
Corn?
Yeah, he says, it smells like field corn, man. It did. It smelled like field corn.
Well, but field corn doesn't smell bad.
Apparently it did to Phil. But it's coming out of a carcass. It grossed him out. It's like, well, don't shoot it next time, dummy. Just shoot in the air. Shoot to warn it. I don't know. You killed it. We got to do this. Well, I killed it. But I killed two in the same day. But it's like, what the hell?
It's kind of illegal.
No, it's legal.
You get one tag. Back then, you got one tag.
Like five, Scott. That's how it works. It's not one tag. You can kill like 50,000.
Not back then. You can now.
No, then. It was 2006, 2007. You could have bucks. That's why Phil killed it. But does, tons. Actually, that same year, we hunted all week. I took the whole week off. And we went to a family farm. And my grandfather was along with us. And he's in his 80s. And so my uncle, my father, myself, and my grandfather. And a buck was staring me down. I was headed, and I didn't shoot it because I had already killed a buck. I was like, I want to put my tag on it. What the hell are you doing? I went, well, you know. And that was gnarly. That was because that farm it's a family farm that we own. It's like 120 acres up in that, closer to 70. It's all flat. But that was pretty cool. That year was kind of excellent because it was like 55 degrees the whole damn week. Many years ago, folks. So now that you know that I'm a beastly savage, which you probably are,
you are a savage.
Scott is a ponce.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah, you would eat the venison.
Oh yeah, I'd eat the venison.
Next year, I'll go out and kill a deer so you can eat it.
We'll go out and kill a deer together. I'd like to go elk hunting.
Do you have a shotgun?
I do have a shotgun right now.
It doesn't have a slugger barrel in it though, does it?
Yeah,
it doesn't. I'll help you. I have two. So, folks, because I'm a man, we're going to bid you adieu. But we will see you next time on the Wine Vault. Good night.